discrimination in HPV vaccine promotion, ER care for autistic patients, staving off Alzheimer's with exercise, and we'll look at the nursing care of the increasing number of geriatric oncology patients we're going to encounter. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, our podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for checking out our program this week. We've got a great show for you. First up in this week's nursing news items, we'll be looking at allegations of discrimination and how we promote and administer HPV vaccines to our minority youth. Then, in this week's special tip segment, I have geriatric oncology nurse Peggy Burhen on the show here to talk with me about the increasing patient population of geriatric oncology patients. We know that as we get older, our risk of cancer increases, and that aging population we have is going to increase the number of cancer patients that are elderly we encounter. So what kind of special skills do we need to help care for these patients? We're going to have answers to that and more later on in this episode after the news. Before we get to the news, though, I do want to make sure you follow up on all of the information from this and all of our episodes, and you can do that by heading over to nursingshow.com. Check out the links in each episode's show notes. There are also other articles. There are links to other things like our free Nursing Show mobile app. There are student nurse tips and a lot of other things over there, so check it out. But first of all, make sure you're following up on what I talk about in the show each week so you understand how it's applied using your own nursing scope of practice. If you want to get back in touch with me, have a question still, well, please do so. You can always drop me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you, and I will get back to you. I respond to every email that comes in, so send me things. You can send me links to news items you want me to cover, maybe an interview suggestion with you or somebody you know. Whatever the case may be, keep those emails coming. Also, I'm going to be in San Francisco in just about the end of this week, actually, coming up for the American Nursing Informatics Association, or ANIA. If you're a nurse informaticist and you're attending this event, make sure you come by and say hi to me. I'm in the exhibit hall area, and I'll be doing interviews there, so maybe I can interview you as well. Also, a special thank you to Physiocontrol, NESI, and the Advanced Ultraviolet Systems Company for sponsoring my trip to the upcoming AACN conference in New Orleans in May. And I'll have more information on that as well, but I want to thank those companies for supporting my upcoming trip. Kicking off the news for nurses this week, let's take a look at an article I found over at thegazette.com, which looks at discrepancies in HPV administration to different ethnic groups. According to a study from the University of Iowa College of Public Health, there are broad disparities based on both gender and race when it comes to HPV vaccine administration. The study they did was published in the February issue of the American Journal of Public Health, and it found that white women were far more likely to receive the full HPV vaccine series than women who were Black, Latina, or any of the male recipients. So as you know, the series for HPV vaccine is 3 shots recommended for young preteens aged 11 to 12, both male and female, prior to sexual activity to prevent the most common viruses that cause genital warts. These viruses can also lead to other things such as cervical and other cancers later in life. I've talked about this vaccine before here on the show. Most recently, I talked about the lack of focus on cancer prevention when we talk about this to parents of children that we recommend the virus and the vaccine for. Now, this study looked at almost 6,500 young adult respondents from the National Health Interview Survey conducted by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Estimates say that as many as 14 million people each year become infected with HPV, but the nature of the virus, especially in women, means that many won't manifest visible symptoms, in some cases, for years after initial contact with an infected sexual partner. Based on the information from the survey, minorities and men were more than 30% less likely to get started with the HPV vaccine series and up to 50% less likely to finish the complete series when compared to white women. The authors of the study say that there needs to be more culturally sensitive information when talking to patients about vaccinations, and we need to create more culturally diverse educational resources about the benefits of the HPV vaccine. So I want you to keep this in mind when you come into contact with young people and patients from all backgrounds. Try to encourage parents to get their kids vaccinated. Next up in the news is a great article on caring for patients with autism during stressful medical and healthcare events in their lives. The article comes from the Kaiser Health Network site over at khn.org. I love their articles on what is going on in healthcare, and I recommend them as a resource to you when you want to read some great articles or inspiring information on healthcare. This particular article is about what nurses and other health professionals in places like clinics and emergency departments can do to better prepare themselves for patients with special needs, like autism. The article says visits as a patient to these types of facilities always incurs a certain amount of stress, and that makes sense. Imagine dealing with that stress when your coping mechanisms are not as developed as most other patients. Because of this, more and more emergency departments and urgent care centers are now making special rooms and special resources available for these particular patients. Maybe your unit is already doing this. One example, the Nemours Children's Hospital ER incorporates questions about autism into their regular intake assessment. When parents or caregivers answer in the affirmative, then the team in the ER institutes special assessment and treatment protocols for the time that patient is in their care. This includes things like alternative modes of communication, for instance, including written or even keyboarding with a tablet computer to communicate with the healthcare team. This is especially important since as many as 1 in 50 children or adults who present to us may fall somewhere on the autism spectrum. They are also considered an underserved community member, and this means they are more likely to need ER services or emergency mental health management even. ER teams are often ill-prepared to cope with this type of patient, but we can't accept that excuse, can we? So we have to adapt to each and every patient we encounter and strive not to fail them because of our deficiencies in being able to cope with them. So I urge you to look up resources on managing and communicating with patients with special needs. It is something we owe not only to our patients, but also to ourselves as nursing professionals. Finally, in our news this week is a look at new data on staving off the onset of Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. The article comes from today.com and refers to a study published recently in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. They conducted a multi-center study on the subject of exercise and its effect on brain health. The study looked at the brain volume of gray matter in the areas usually hit by Alzheimer's among the study's participants. Now, those who regularly exercised had a larger brain volume in those areas, and that led to a 50% reduced chance of getting Alzheimer's disease. This is based on prior research showing impairment within 5 years of brain gray matter volume assessments. Now, the difference in gray matter volume only amounted to a 5% difference across the study participants, and that doesn't seem like much, but when compared to the risk for developing dementia, it translated to nearly 50% reduced risk within the exercise group. The study's authors say that the amount of exercise seems to be about 500 or more calories of additional energy expenditure per day. They also said it doesn't matter how those calories are expended, whether it is low energy activities like gardening or doing housework, or more vigorous things like aerobic exercise, jogging, cycling, things like that. It always came back to the fact that even low levels of regular exercise seem to have significant benefits for our overall health. So remember this, and not only for your patients, keep it in mind as well for yourselves. We need all of you healthy in mind and body too. As our patient population ages, so do the number of elderly patients suffering with various cancers. What do we as nurses do to prepare ourselves adequately to care for these patients with these special needs in both assessment and care? I talked recently with geriatric oncology nurse specialist Peggy Burhen this week. We talked about the nursing specialty itself and what every nurse, no matter what your specialty, you can do to prepare for this increasing patient population you're going to encounter. Check it out. Peggy, I want to welcome you to the Nursing Show. It's great to have you here on the program. And we'll start off just asking you to tell us a little bit about why you wanted to become a nurse. What drew you to this profession?
Oh, hi, Jamie, and thank you for having me on the Nursing Show. You know, I think about that a lot because I was a science major when I started out in school, but saw a lot of my colleagues and friends getting jobs that didn't involve a lot of people interaction, and I really wanted to do something that involved interacting with people more. So I thought, oh, this is great. Like, I could be a nurse, and I could do science as well as, you know, have more of a service job. So that's kind of what drew me to it. And then I've been a nurse for 36 years now, so apparently it was a good decision.
Excellent. What was your career path like? Because one of the things I get a lot of questions about from either student nurses or even new nurses, where do they get to the point in their career where they say, ah, this is my specialty, or this is the thing I want to do with my career? And I find so many nurses go in different directions throughout their careers. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what the roadmap of your career looked like.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I find that a lot of nurses struggle with that in the beginning, and they feel like, oh, I have to have a plan. I have to know that I want to be a pediatric nurse or an oncology nurse or whatever your plan is. And I didn't start out that way. I started out in 1980 when there were plentiful jobs for nurses and you could do pretty much whatever you wanted. And I knew I wanted to work on a med-surg floor because that's what we were all told we had to do. You have to go work on a med-surg floor. And I wound up being assigned to a surgical oncology floor and pretty much stayed in oncology most of my career. So it was a little bit of serendipity how I got there, but it took a lot of different roads and different opportunities that were offered to me, never really thinking about, oh, like, what's the long-term goal, just looking at, oh, this looks like a great opportunity, this looks like fun. So I don't think we should get too caught up in, like, having a master plan, because now that I'm nearing the end of my career, I feel like it worked out really well. So I started out at University of Illinois working on this surgical, mostly oncology floor, and then wound up taking a job in the clinic so I could work 9 to 5, and then wound up taking a job back on a floor so I could finish my master's degree. And then after finishing my master's degree, took a job with Abbott, which was a pharmaceutical company at the time, looking for nurses to help educate other nurses in certain areas. So I did some work for industry, which really taught me a lot about business and about management and developing other skill sets that as nurses, you know, and public speaking that we don't normally get. Mm-hmm. So I felt that really added to my my career. But I've done probably about 15 years of management as well in a variety of different opportunities. And I did some home care. So I've just had quite a diverse background, which sounds a little scattered, but it kind of all came together in geriatric oncology when I really saw that I wanted to work with older adults specifically.
And that's an interesting, you know, career choice in that it's become such a hot button issue. As our population continues to age, geriatric care is really going to be the fundamentals almost of nursing care, I think, over the next 20 to 50 years. I mean, it's just that growing, you know, aging baby boomer population is going to be a significant portion of our patient population coming very soon.
Exactly. In fact, you can't open a newspaper without seeing that the population of older adults is growing, and by 2030, 20% of the U.S. population is going to be 65 or older, so one in every five people. So it's clearly going to affect healthcare, and cancer it's going to affect as well, because when you think about who gets cancer, the majority of people who get cancer are 65 and older. In fact, it's about 60%. So there is a growing population just in general, but clearly in the oncology population as well. In fact, it's projected to grow by 67%, the incidence of cancer in older adults. So we have to be prepared. You're right, nurses, we have to be prepared.
Yeah.
We're the largest group of healthcare professionals that's really taking care of these older adults.
And there's so many things to think about in that regard because, you know, even 10 or 15 years ago, cancer was seen as this, you know, end of life decision-making process, not necessarily a treatment process, but preparing for end of life. And that has changed drastically, even and especially for the geriatric population. Someone with cancer at 70, could still live another 10, 15, 20 years even, fighting their cancer and successfully beating it and going on to become cancer free.
Right. I think one of the things we don't think about, actually the life expectancy chart, so that an 80-year-old woman in good health would live another 13 years. So if you have an 80-year-old woman who comes into your office and has a stage 1 or stage 2 cancer, it would behoove us to treat that person, right? Because they're going to live another 13 years on average if they're in good health. So sometimes I think there is this propensity to think, oh, 80, that's kind of old. Maybe we shouldn't treat this person. But when I think about a lot of the patients that I've taken care of in their 80s and 90s, and they still have a very robust life, I think it's great that we can provide these treatments to older adults.
So what are some of the things that are really important issues right now dealing with geriatric patients and oncology? As you said, so many of our geriatric patients are likely to experience a cancer in the course of their lifetime. And that means that are a lot of nurses that aren't necessarily oncology nurses are going to be running into these patients and having to provide supportive care throughout other specialties that these patients are encountering.
Great. I think the big change is that you do have, as you get older, a chance of having comorbid conditions. Now, I just said that, an 80-year-old in good health, but that doesn't mean you couldn't have a high blood pressure and diabetes or any other comorbidity. And there are changes that happen in our physical bodies that even if they don't show up on lab values, we know that renal function is decreasing. So what's going to happen when I give this person chemotherapy? So one of the things we do in geriatric oncology is we do geriatric assessment on a patient to determine who's a fit 80-year-old and who's a frail 80-year-old, and how can we best predict if they're going to tolerate the treatment well, if they're going to need additional supportive care. One of the things we don't always think about, even if we would assess that patient, we say, okay, that's a really fit 80-year-old, and we're going to go ahead and treat them. And we may not realize that they are also the caregiver for another older person in the home, maybe a spouse, that possibly is less well than the patient we're taking care of. So caring for older adults does involve thinking beyond just the patient at hand, too. It's thinking about what is the support system. How are they going to get to the clinic every day for radiation therapy, if that's the case, or that's the treatment recommendation. So by doing a geriatric assessment, we're able to figure out like what else is going on in this person's life and their physical functioning that could affect their care.
So this is really something that could be affecting all aspects of nursing care and really many specialties, managing these patients, whether it's a home care nurse assisting with the care, talking to the oncology team. So I expect communication between the different specialties is really paramount.
Right. That's very true. In fact, geriatrics is often called a interdisciplinary specialty because we can't do it all alone. When we do a geriatric assessment, we frequently uncover, oh, we need a physical therapist for help with this. We need a social worker to help with this. Maybe we even need a neuropsychologist if there's, cognition changes. So there are times when we absolutely need to involve our team. And so we have here at City of Hope, what we do is we have interdisciplinary rounds after we perform the geriatric assessment and look at how do we interact with our other multi-specialty colleagues to provide care for this patient.
So are there resources out there for nurses that aren't geriatric specialists or geriatric oncology specialists that can help us be better prepared for this aging population so that we understand the differences in how we assess these patients, the differences in how we communicate with these patients?
Right. There are tools that are available. They're not widely used. You can actually become certified in gerontology as a nurse, and very few people know that that's a possibility. In fact, only about 1% of nurses are certified in gerontology. One of the things we're doing here at City of Hope is we've been awarded a grant to run an educational program called Geriatric Oncology, Educating Nurses to Improve Quality Care. And this is going to be a 2.5-day course in Anaheim, California. in which groups can come together, so you can bring a team of three people from your organization and put together a plan on how you are going to implement improved care for older adults with cancer. So this focuses specifically on cancer, and there are other programs that, you know, address other specialties. But you're right, a lot of times we're so focused on our specialty, whether it's cardiology or oncology or renal disease, that we sometimes forget there's a geriatric component that we need to fold in as well.
So about that, is that the conference we were talking about before we started recording that you got coming up this summer?
Yes, that is. It's a grant that was funded by NIH, the National Institutes of Health, as I mentioned, to educate oncology nurses and geriatrics. And we have a nationally recognized faculty, of which Dr. Arthi Hurria, who is a prominent geriatric oncologist, she is the principal investigator for the grant. And we're going to discuss, you know, aging, changes in function, cognition, you know, how this contributes to distress management, polypharmacy, pain management. We're also going to touch on some medical legal issues, and then ultimately talk about how we can empower nurses to make changes in their organization so they can advocate for older adults. So it's really looking at taking a team approach and bringing it home to your own institution.
Excellent. Is there a website or some place where people can go and find out more information about that?
Oh, yes. We do have, if you go to www.mycarg, that's stands for Cancer and Aging Research Group, so M-Y-C-A-R-G .org, and that will take you to a tab that says Nursing Conference, and you can check out more information there.
Excellent. Well, I this is something that I'm very passionate about. I mean, a lot of us have aging parents that we are helping to manage their care and manage their comorbidities and different things that they're dealing with. And it is something that we can appreciate how many other people are dealing with these same challenges. So bringing a group of your peers from your organization together to go to a conference like this is something I highly recommend. I find that these types of specialized meeting events are really key to professional development. If you aren't going to your specialties conferences, if you aren't looking for other opportunities to expand your knowledge, so you're not just stuck in with blinders on in your specialty, it's important to do that. And this is just a great opportunity to better prepare yourself as a nurse and your organization for the aging of the population and their care with oncology patients. So, Peggy, any last thoughts for the audience here as we move forward and kind of wrap up the interview?
Well, I think, Jamie, you bring up a good point about caring for other people in your family. So if as you're a nurse and you're listening to this and you say, well, maybe geriatrics isn't my thing, but think about all the other people in your life that are getting older, and you may want to educate yourself on geriatrics just to help the people in your life as well. I teach classes here at City of Hope, too, and a lot of the nurses that come to my class, they say, well, I work in pediatrics, but, you know, I have aging parents and grandparents, and I need to know what to do. So it's something that we're all going to be faced with, whether professionally or personally, and, you know, I encourage you to increase your database in terms of geriatric care. So thank you for letting me share my thoughts with your audience, Jamie.
Well, excellent. And we'll make sure we have a link to the show notes in the show notes to that conference. And I encourage people to look at opportunities like this. This is a perfect way to get your organization moving forward and being better prepared, whether it's a large hospital group or a smaller local clinic. It is good to be prepared for our aging population and being better able to take care of them. So look for that link in the show notes. And Peggy, thanks for coming on the Nursing Show.
Okay. Thanks again, Jamie. Appreciate it.
That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. Make sure you follow up, though, on all of the information you picked up in this episode. Head over to nursingshow.com and check out the episode show notes. There's a link right there at the top of the page. In there are listings for all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. From the most recent one at the top, you can scroll down and go all the way back to the very first episode. But I want you to get the full information there with links to other resources so that you understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me your comments, your questions, suggestions, news links. Help support the Nursing Show community with your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter. There's a link and form right on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site, so fill out that short form and we'll send you the links to each episode's show notes directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me on social media sites. I'm available there under the handle PodMedic, so you can find me there under twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic, so friend or follow me. You can also become a member of the community over on Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page at facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button there and join the conversation on that page. I post other nursing and healthcare articles and pictures on the Nursing Show site throughout the course of each week and over at the Nursing Show page, so check it all out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. Remember, it comes out every Friday for you, so you can wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.